The Gambling Files podcast presents Desert Island Discs with your host, John Bruford. Hello and welcome to The Gambling Files podcast presents Desert Island Discs. It's not a typo. It is, in fact, about an island of dessert. Well, kind of about an island of desserts. It's just we have to distinguish it from copycat products that might have been on Radio 4. And just to fuck with us, they went back in time and did it first. I'm your host, John Bruford, for this podcast offshoot in which we invite guests, thought leaders, industry figures, C-level guests, although Fintan's definition of C-level and mine are quite different, to talk about what they would take onto a tropical island with them. It's not a desert island, it's definitely tropical. This episode's guest is the magnificent Jennifer Bowman of IGT fame. Jennifer Bowman, welcome.
Thank you.
What is your title at IGT?
Today, it's Senior Director of Gaming Marketing for EMEA, Latin America, Canada, and Global Marketing Operations. That's why I was like, are you sure?
How big is your business card?
Well, actually, now I just say Senior Director of Gaming Marketing. It's much easier. Well,
Senior Director of Gaming Marketing, non-US territories.
Exactly. So I don't have APAC right now. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. So right now I do the Caribbean, Canada, and all Latin America, Central America, things like that, South America, all of EMEA. So it's a broad group, but it's a fun group, and it's territories. I just realized the other day, like I've been across Europe now almost 20 years. Since I moved from the USA. So even though I still have a super thick American accent, it's been a couple decades now. So yeah.
I was gonna say your accent remains confidently strong.
Very thick accent. And I don't know if it's just because I've always worked in global roles. So I've never been isolated in a particular dialect. Or it's depending on who I'm speaking with.
Where are you from in the US?
I was raised near Yellowstone National Park. Right on the Idaho-Montana border, mainly.
Home of the picnic basket.
Yeah, I wish we had a picnic basket, but I did have a great rucksack. Like, I would always pack up my rucksack and get on my little bike or on my friend's horses. They always had horses. I only had a bike. I had a great bike, though.
It costs far less to keep a bike than a horse.
Yeah, it's a bit cheaper cost option there. We're terrible in the snow. Seriously. It was incredibly cold. No, I talk about this often. I came from this tiny village of 74 people. And it was this awesome experience because you grow up in such isolation that you have to be incredibly independent and resourceful. And, you know, if the plumbing breaks, you don't have a plumber nearby to call. There's somebody who has taught you life skills on survival and everything in between. So it's such a culture shock.
You say independent and resourceful, but there's also presumably a great need for collaboration and...
Exactly. Your community is, you draw on them for everything. You know, we were very much raised by my friends' parents as much as they were the wolves, right? Like we were constantly at somebody else's dinner table and I know their family recipes as much as I know mine and things like that. So it's kind of a bizarre thing. And then as life, you know, urbanization happens and one thing led to another and I found myself living in huge metropolises and it's such a disconnect when I decided to move to the countryside here. For my friends, they were like, you're going to die living in the country. And I was like, no, you have to remember where I came from. Like, you know, being in big, wide open spaces and rural environments is what I know as where I began. So.
Crikey.
I know. Certainly wasn't a tropical island. That's for sure. It was a high mountainous desert.
that thing about being somewhere that's isolated, I mean, that would also give you an appreciation of the novelty and the convenience of city living. So that's probably why you've loved London so much.
Yeah, just having everything on your doorstep, you know, whether it's a 24-hour town like Las Vegas or, you know, London, which you just, there's just something for everybody in that city at all times, and it never sleeps. You know, it's just such an incredible environment. And it's interesting how when it's no longer convenient and you have to make a plan or you have to run for the last train or figure out, you know, different logistics that I just took for granted for so many years. It was quite a cultural shift.
Well, it's finding out the difference between need and want, isn't it?
Well, and I have to say my spending has gone significantly down as well. It's a bit like online shopping. If I don't allow myself to do online shopping, I don't shop as much. So
what's your nearest city? Is it Gloucester?
For reference, your town, it would be Cirencester. And then, you know, Gloucester is kind of, you know, major hospitals and things like that. Swindon, perhaps. Yeah. One each side.
Fuck Swindon.
Oxford isn't far. Oxford's 45 minutes.
Oxford's nice. I went to a great rock club there, but admittedly, it was about 30 years ago, so maybe it's
maybe not the same.
I don't know. For reference, Jennifer lived in London for a long time and has recently moved to the Cotswolds in the UK, which is, well, it's kind of like flipping a coin. it's completely the other side of living to living in London. And it's not dissimilar to where I'm from in rural England. So I totally get the appeal. So can I call you? I have a nickname for you.
Oh, dear God.
I use it in my head every time I see you. Or
tell me everything.
An email or whatever. Well, no, see, I'm probably not the only person that uses this. J-Bo.
Oh, so many. So many people are like, oh, J-Bo, how's she doing? Talk to J-Bo today. Yeah. And I will always be comparable to, you know, the Greek goddess J-Lo. If I am ever in any way a derivative off of her nickname, I will be happy. So no, lots of people call me J-Bo. Lots of people call me Jen, Jenny, a small segment of people call me Queen. I either get Bowman, Baby Bowman, J-Bo, all those things. For some reason, you know, as with all monikers, like everybody just finds something that they love, but I answer it to it. Some of my closest London friends actually call me J-Bo.
I think it's not comparing you to Jennifer Lopez. I think if anything, it's comparing Jennifer Lopez to you.
Yeah, in a parallel quantum physics life. I'm the antithesis.
I don't know. She's made some bad movies. So anyway, right? The principle that we are working with today is you are on a tropical island.
Okay.
Your food, there's food, there's fresh water, there's the means to build shelter. You know, the basics are taken care of.
So I don't have to worry about survival.
Nope. We're all good. This is stuff that's going to stop you from going mental.
Oh, like lockdown, but on a tropical island.
Basically, my God, we could have called it COVID Island Discs.
It's all right. It's good.
But this is still in the working group stage, so the name could change. But there is a relevant question which led us to the name. So you get to choose three albums, which I appreciate to younger listeners might be a slightly foreign concept. But three albums, three books, three movies, although some people have been like, oh, can I have a series? You could have a box set or something in there, I suppose. Mm. One song, which is ideally not on the albums. The example I always use for this is somebody might choose Eye of the Tiger, but nobody is going to choose a fucking album by Survivor.
Fair enough.
One pet.
Okay.
One object.
Mm.
one dessert, and one piece of advice to give your younger self, and you choose when to give it to yourself.
Okay. I mean, that would change if I'm going to stay on the tropical island, or if I, or if this is like a brief visit. So,
it's up to you.
All right. Where do we begin?
Let's start with the albums.
Okay. Full albums, only three. Okay, I'm gonna read very telling of my age here. This is gonna be good. So, probably like Pink's Greatest Hits. I would take that. I think that she's just amazing for every mood. I would take Stevie Nicks' Greatest Hits.
Is there Stevie Nicks' Greatest Hits?
Oh yeah, came out in the 90s and it's glorious. 90s, maybe early 2000s. Yeah, no, 90s. I mean, you could swap that with like a Fleetwood Mac Greatest Hits, but if I had to choose between them, I would be like Stevie Nicks. And third one, gosh, what would I say? Maybe like, if you have to listen to the whole album all the time, that's the problem, right?
I mean, you've gone for two compilations, which I think is a little cheeky.
Yeah, well, because, you know, you got to have diversity. So now I think I should pick a soundtrack because you get so many artists all on one thing. So I'm going to go with Pretty in Pink soundtrack.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I wasn't expecting that. Okay, so to just go back a little step here, I'm just wondering about the relevance of these artists and this music.
Yeah.
Like, why is this special to you? So what is it? I mean,
so like the first two, like I have theme songs in life, right? And my theme song my whole life for like 20 years was Gypsy by Fleetwood Mac. I love that song. And it just, you know, and Stevie Nicks has this incredible, soulful badassery about her music that connects with people live and in an album. And it just resonated with me for life. And I thought, right, here we go. It's actually, you know, when you accidentally pick like email addresses and things that you didn't realize were going to follow you for life, or Instagram handles. So it's part of my Instagram handle is Gypsy because of this song and this relevance and things like that. But, so definitely Stevie Nicks, just because she just draws from a place and has a talent that I, and a scrutiny of, you know, that I just wouldn't even be able to understand. And then Pink, I was in Amsterdam when one of her albums, I was living in Amsterdam for 7 years, and one of her albums came out, and this is when I had like CD player in my SUV, and I was driving to work, and I only had three CDs in my car. I had Usher and Pink and some other silly thing in there. And I just remember I was always switching between this Usher CD and this Pink CD. And there was a song from Pink on this album, and it's called 'Cause I Can. And it's just this bold, ridiculous, rock and roll, popish kind of like, I don't care what you think of me. I'm going to be as loud and as ridiculous and crazy and vibrant and live my life out loud as I can. And it literally goes back to her chorus of 'cause I can. And it was at a time in my life when I just thought, yes, yes, be ridiculous, be your most outlandish, crazy, do what you want to kind of person be. And it talks about the success that she built and silencing critics and things like that. So those, that's driving that. And then, you know, as I see Pink perform live, as I see Stevie Nicks perform live, I'm inspired by the power of connecting with very charismatic people, and how entertainment can just make you feel like something bigger, like you're part of something bigger than you are. And it's why I love doing live events. You feel a sense of why you're there that day, and you got to experience something that day. I mean, I was in the Hyde Park audience that did the Bohemian Rhapsody, singing to before Green Day came on and played Hyde Park. They had like a set change and they were playing Bohemian Rhapsody, and 75,000 fans started singing it like a karaoke, and the crowd is going crazy. And this is all over YouTube. And I was in the crowd. I know exactly where I was. And I remember that moment. And same thing when I met these Pink or Stevie Nicks concerts. So, and then the final one, just because growing up, I was obsessed with like Brat Pack movies. Like, I just was like, one day I'm going to live in a city and I'm going to be Molly Ringwald and I'm going to have all these amazing things happen in my life that are going to be just like a John Hughes movie, maybe. and everything's going to be fine and it's okay to be kooky. And so I loved this Pretty in Pink soundtrack because it was like nothing anyone listened to where I grew up. You know, I grew up in staunch country and Western music, which I actually thought about, do I pick something like that? Because it's a part of my history and where I grow and what makes me feel comforted. But I used to play that album all the time, and from Psychedelic Furs all the way to OMD. And it was just this great album. And I mean, when I hear it now as an adult, I'm transported to a time when I was like, this is a great album versus like today.
It is a great album.
So yeah, I think it's just about connecting who you are in that moment to make you, I mean, in this idea of what keeps you from going insane. Would I dance around in a bikini on a beach on a tropical island to any of these albums? Yes. Would I build my own hut when fire screaming these songs? Yes. Would I also be like, oh my God, how am I going to get off this island? And yes.
Well, maybe I'll just put this album on again. That's interesting, and I'm going to comment on your choices because
I do like really strong female and especially great lyrics music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my favorite lyric ever was in fact written by a woman. I know, okay. It's shocking to me as well. Chrissy Hynde, actually. Don't get me wrong, if I split like light refracted. That line just blows my mind. I love it. But anyway, I love Pink. And I don't know a lot of her music, but I love Pink as an individual.
Yeah.
And I think as a role model, and I've said this to my daughter, like, I think as a role model, I'm not sure there is anybody better for young girls and young women, because of the unapologetic way that she approaches everything.
Bold, authentic.
But understanding, you know, she's not perfect. She has frailties. She has this, that, the other, but she's accepting of herself. And also as a live performer, she looks, amazing. What I've seen, she looks fucking incredible.
It's amazing.
But like Stevie Nicks, like I don't know why, but Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks, I've never had a connection with them, and I don't know why.
Yeah, mine came late in life. Well, I should say they weren't popular when I started liking them. It was before the revival that they had in the late 90s. And I think it was a bridge album that I could identify with, something that the older generation, like my parents and aunties and things, would be listening to, but it wasn't anything that was like popular. And it just, there's a long soulful meaning in so many songs. And there's also this crazy, you know, do you remember like 80s roller rinks with like roller skates, right? And like Edge of 17, I had the dress with the little skirt like the ice skaters wore. I had my own Minnie Mouse ice skates. I carried my ice skating bag. They always played Edge of 17, and like these like really good teenage boy roller skaters would come and be like, I need you to skate with me on this because you're such a good roller skater. And I was like winning all the limbo competitions and getting the free Coca-Cola and popcorn. Like it was like, so it's just wrapped up in this whole moment of ridiculous early 80s, like what it is to be in a candy pop world.
That's I totally relate to the John Hughes thing.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge, huge fan of his work. I mean, really huge. Although, oddly enough, and obviously he didn't direct Pretty in Pink, but he did write it. It was a Howard Deutsch movie. But it is kind of, it's almost a distillation of his movies. Mm. You know, it's like, and actually it's one of his movies that I rate least highly.
Mm.
I actually think Some Kind of Wonderful does the same thing.
Some Kind of Wonderful is amazing.
And the talent in that movie is ridiculous. But I had never listened to anybody else's podcast. I've been doing podcasts for like 4 years, 5 years or whatever. And I'd never listened to a podcast until I think it was Christmas 2023.
Right.
And I listened to a Guardian journalist called Hadley Freeman. Oh, she was with the Guardian then. And she did a short podcast series about John Hughes movies.
Oh!
And her co-host was Hughes's music supervisor.
Ah. Oh. See, it's all about the soundtrack.
Well worth finding.
Okay.
It's only like 6 parts, I think, but it's excellent. And there's an amazing story about Elton John in there.
Okay, go find it. Very good.
Which actually led to Kate Bush writing This Woman's Work for She's Having a Baby. Mm. What a song that is.
Mm.
But interesting choices there. I mean, you've got 3 compilations. I can't argue against compilations, though, because why would
you? You only get 3, so I'm about optimizing value.
Yeah. No, it's a strong value proposition there, and I love the Pretty in Pink soundtrack. Although the Psychedelic Furs track Pretty in Pink, as Richard Butler has said many times in interviews, it's actually about a girl being naked, not a girl wearing pink. But also they re-recorded it for the movie.
Did they?
And they added the saxophone solo. The original doesn't have saxophone solo, and it's got keyboard. And actually, the original does kind of work better.
I think you're biased.
I do. I do. Quite you're like purist. Psychedelic Furs. Well, no, it was through John Hughes that I discovered the band Flesh for Lulu, which I'm pretty sure nobody ever listens to. But they do the key song in Some Kind of Wonderful, and Ferris Bueller has 2 Flesh for Lulu posters on his wall.
Okay. They also use an instrumental version in Ferris Bueller's Day Off from Pretty in Pink that has a lyric version of a song.
Well, the famous instrumental is when they're in the Chicago Art Institute, which is the Smiths, isn't it? It's
if you go listen to the Pretty in Pink soundtrack, there's actually the version with the lyrics on it.
See, I'm not a Smiths fan either, but I do love that song.
It's a great song. It's haunting.
And it's short.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of things that don't outstay their welcome. And that song is like about a minute and 40.
It's like dinner guests. Okay, fantastic. Everybody's had pudding.
You're not getting dessert. Fuck off.
We're out of champagne. It's time to go.
I was out of champagne. I haven't even opened it.
Oh.
You've had your burgers. So we move on to 3 books.
Okay. I'm such a child, really.
Where's this going to go?
So there's 2 books that I reread every year. I pick one of them to reread at Christmas every year. Because, you know, there's not a lot going on at Christmas. So one is Anna Green Gables, sometimes I deviate for the second book of the series of Anna Avonlea, but Anna Green Gables, like, huge, what my stepdaughter calls as a super fan. So all things Anna Green Gables are things that bring me great delight and joy. And so that's one. And then the other one I reread is a book by Laura Ingalls Wilder, which is what the series, the Little House series, was based on. Her memoirs, which was a series of children's books. And there's one in the middle of that series that's called The Long Winter or These Happy Golden Years. And both of those are gorgeous. So I would pick maybe The Long Winter as book number two. And the... Don't hear my dogs. Elsa. She doesn't agree, so sorry.
She is pissed off. She's saying you should be choosing White Fang.
There's a dog walking outside. Let's see if I can mute me.
Well,
I have three dogs. So we also live on a tourist street, but as soon as a tourist walks by, then they go crazy.
It's okay.
I'll shut the blinds. 1 second. And back. Okay. So Long Winter with Laura Ingalls Wilder or These Happy Golden Years. Those are really good. But and then third book. Now, I haven't reread this, but I think about it often. And I've given it as a gift. Like,
it's American Psycho, isn't it?
15. No, it's a recent book called Daisy Jones and the Six. And they made a television limited series out of it as well, and played by Elvis's granddaughter. But the book just has this beautiful dialogue and staccato rhythm, and the author herself, like, kind of pulls people forward in this conversation and this dramatic unfolding. That's beautiful and engaging and entertaining and I love it. So, you know, did it change my world? No, but it's like, if you're trying to stay sane on a tropical island all by yourself and you want some good entertainment, funnily enough, I should actually talk to a therapist about this. Maybe, like, funnily enough, like, the character in Daisy Jones and the Six, I kept thinking about Stevie Nicks. So maybe that's why liked her.
Oh no, that she was the inspiration, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think she's a very kind of Stevie Nicks-esque, you know, kind of.
I read an interview with Stevie Nicks fairly recently, and she's just remarkably sanguine, and her shit is very together.
Yeah,
and the interviewer did ask her about that.
Oh, okay. Well, see, I feel better.
I'm gonna see if I can find it.
Yeah, it was such a good book. So,
well, I haven't read it, but I have read another one by the same writer about a competitive tennis player. And it was excellent. She's a terrific writer.
Oh, she's excellent. And the Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And anyway, so yeah, I'd love to read, though. I read. When I'm in a reading mode, I try and read one book a week. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the downside of moving from London. London is such a literary city. You get on the tube and everybody's reading. It's wonderful. And so I was reading constantly, whether it was on my phone or paperback or whatever I had at hand. And I don't read as much now that I'm in the countryside, which... You would think I would have more time to while away with a book, but the dogs.
But that's the thing. There's less to do in the countryside, but you certainly find ways to fill your day.
There's a lot of things that have to get done around the house that you don't have to worry about in London.
Walking dogs and picking up shit, mostly, I would have thought. I'm lucky. I have a large dog, and so if he does a crap and I can't find it, I just look on Google Earth.
Glad yours is in real time. You can see where your pizza delivery is.
See where dog shit is. Interesting choice. So is there an element of that sort of reminders of childhood and the comfort of childhood?
I think so. And so my obsession with Anne of Green Gables, you know, here's this, you know, emotionally precarious upstart and just, you know, full of creativity and ideas and can't stop herself from talking and can't stop herself from getting into predicaments and just has this unbelievable thirst for what's imaginable. And that's, it just resonates with generations after generations of people. And I think about that character and the words on the page so often in my life, you know, when I'm walking through a forest and I see a particular scene, I hear the words from the pages jump out at me. When I see, you know, a field full of blossoming trees, I'm like, oh, the white way of delight, or, you know, I'll say, oh, there's just so much scope for the imagination here. And so there's just little quotes that you carry and I find comforting, but not comforting for this sense of an idyllic kind of childhood. I mean, here is an orphan who, you know, went to farmers and, you know, it's a very, you know, you have to work really hard in that life, but also in this sense of you can be anything you want to be. And it encouraged women to get educated, encouraged girls to be precocious and not just be the pretty one. And it encouraged this idea of a heroine that was imperfect and inspiring. And so I find her inspiring, this character inspiring and hilarious, like very, very funny. She's over dramatic. She's
should I just be grateful you didn't choose Pippi Longstocking?
As a child, I probably would have. I mean, who doesn't want a flying boat and red pigtails?
But there is a theme here. There is a theme here. Hmm. It's female strength and
all strong female characters.
What's the word I'm looking for? It's female strength and competence.
Yeah, yeah. Just unbelievable ability to create in necessity and brilliantly. Right?
Cope and survive. Because, I mean, you know, the...
There's survival.
Laura Ingalls Wilder stories are you know, some of that shit's hard.
Yeah, like it's really.
It's not all Michael fucking Landon.
How do you survive, right? As a pioneer, how do you survive from nothing? What happens when all of your resources are low or depleted? And how do you stay true to your own character and make something out of that? And that's a theme of my entire personal life. Right? Like, how do you take what you have and optimize that and make something incredible and like glittery and something you want to be a part of? I guess so glittery is maybe a strange thing to talk
glittery,
about.
Glittery is perfect.
They probably didn't have a lot of glitter, but you know.
But I mean, you're saying glittery. Do you want to go back and choose one of the Twilight novels?
No, can't do anything scary. Can't do murder mysteries. Can't do zombies, vampires. I have such an overactive imagination. Like everything in my world is like rainbows and glitter and cotton candy and like, you know, no nightmares. Although I love a good spy movie.
But they're built on tension.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, like the odds of me getting murdered are probably very small, but like I can't watch like a murder documentary. And but I think that the odds of me having a spy encounter where I'm accidentally shot in an assassination attempt are smaller. So I don't find them in any way threatening to my real life existence. So yeah, I love good spy movies anyway.
Interesting. Because we are coming on to the movies right now.
Oh, well, here we go. Good spy movie.
Three movies.
Three movies. Okay, here we go again with building from nothing and starting over. When I was living in Amsterdam and I knew no one and I didn't know the language and I was brand new to Europe and I learning the culture, and this is before video conferencing and things were ubiquitous. I had this DVD player and I would play Under the Tuscan Sun like every week. On a Sunday afternoon.
It's a dying lane.
Yeah. And so, and the Keira Knightley version of Pride and Prejudice, I would rewatch one of those every Sunday. So I guess just naturally one of those has to be in the list because I did it in a period of isolation for a long time in a foreign country where I just felt very much this sense of cultural isolation for a long time. And I think it's, you know, just it's fluffy and it's romantic and it's about starting over and building your life in a new version of what your life wants to be, but being authentic to who you are. Like, you don't change, your circumstances change. So I think that's that. And then, I'm a huge, huge Top Gun fan. I know every line of, and so 1 year for my birthday, my partner gave me a manuscript that's signed by the guy who like sent them to Top Gun Academy. He's like, so sorry, I could not afford the Tom Cruise signature one, but it's the original one from like the 80s. And he's like, do you want to watch it and read the manuscript at the same time? I was like, absolutely not. I was like, we are not touching this without document handling gloves on. I know all the words. I know. So I'm a massive Top Gun fan. So if we're allowed to have a series, then I get both. What else did I say? I guess that's three. Pride and Prejudice, Under the Tuscan Sun, Top Gun.
I thoroughly enjoyed the Top Gun sequel.
So good, Maverick.
My only criticism of the first movie, it's a very particular style and the type of movie that was described by its producers as high concept. Like, you can say the entire film, it's not even an elevator pitch, it's a sentence. There's an extraordinary biography of Don Simpson, one of the producers, I don't know if you read it, called High Concept. That guy was batshit.
Just nuts.
Oh my God. You wouldn't. Just the page where it describes his prescription and illegal prescription drugs is extraordinary. It's an amazing read and all about their careers and all of that sort of jazz. But my only issue with that first movie, it's a lot of fun. It's incredibly silly, amazing cast. I mean, like even the bit part players like Rick Rossovich and people like that.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. There's loads of talent in it. But it's the way that sometimes things are edited to make things appear to be more urgent than they are. And of course, they had a lot of restrictions when they were filming the movie on what they could and couldn't film. And they had to use a lot of stock photography from the US Air Force. And so they had to make that look sexy when it's not at all. And so there's a lot of...
Doesn't do it for you.
There's a lot of choppy editing in that, but that's something that they totally fixed in the second movie. And obviously computers are a part of that. But it means that the second movie, the action sequences are so...
intensely good.
But it's really difficult in that kind of sort of kinetic moment to create an environment on the screen that's easy to physically follow or easy to mentally follow the physics of. And I think in the sequel, they absolutely nailed that.
I don't know. I was 12 years old the first time I saw it, and it was on my aunt's VCR on a 13-inch CRT television. And as soon as it was done, I looked at her and I was like, rewind it and watch it again. And I just, I love when a movie is just like, we gotta watch it again. And it just made me sublimely, I don't know, I would have given anything to be a fighter pilot in that moment. I wanted to be an astronaut as a little girl. And then that was the brief moment that I thought, maybe I don't want to be an astronaut. Maybe I want to be like a fighter pilot. And at the time in the U.S. military, you couldn't. You could only be a test pilot. And I was like, well, then I'll be a test pilot.
Why limit yourself to one?
Right. They're like, well, you can start out as one and go into the astronaut
exactly.
program from there.
Most astronauts have piloting experience.
And then I decided, no, no, no. Like, marketing will be much more adrenaline fueled.
Yeah, you'll get your kicks far better on just the day-to-day
basis. You know, the cortisol levels are just very different.
And constant, I would think. And I do kind of like Under the Tuscan Sun, but I love Diane Lane.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, is it the best movie? Absolutely not. Was it something that I watched every week for like 3 years? Yeah.
But seriously, like, it's one of those movies where if I stumble across it, I'll watch it.
Yeah, it's on.
And I think it's like, I know a lot of people love Eat, Pray, Love, but I think Under Tuscan Sun's way better than Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah.
Eat, Pray, Love feels like a box ticking exercise to me.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the idea of, like, you know, behind it, self-discovery, but it just felt, I don't know, I just, why take a year when you can build the Dune life?
Yeah.
And I never really... I'm not the expat for a short period of time. You know, I moved from my home country 20 years ago, and then I moved from that country 7 years later, and then I got dual citizenship in this one. So I just don't think in terms of like 3 months here and then 3 months there. And I mean, that's a holiday. That's like severance package year, which I guess was her whole point. You know, the whole concept was a transition to go figure out what she wanted, but. Yeah, it just didn't resonate with me the same way as, like, get on a plane and don't come back.
Just buy a one-way ticket.
Yeah, buy a house.
Why give yourself an escape option for if things become difficult?
Yeah, commit.
In the words of Dolly Parton, shit or get off the pot.
Dolly, oh, she's so glorious.
She really is.
Dolly.
Very, very. That's the thing. I mean, I know loads of people who can't stand her music, but really appreciate
I love her music. I was listening to Dolly Parton like 2 weeks ago.
Well, that's 2 weeks ago. What have you been doing since?
Well, a lot of Taylor Swift, oddly.
I only heard Taylor Swift for the first time about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I became an accidental Swiftie, but... She fits right in alignment with all the other ones I love. Great lyrics.
Oh, man. The reclamation of her work by re-recording it, that is...
It's how it all began. I hear this story. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm downloading. I download. Next thing you know, Spotify thinks I only like Taylor Swift. And so it only plays... on, you know, like their shuffle algorithm, and it only throws in Taylor Swift for me. And anyway, yeah, so now I'm a firm Swifty, I guess. But I mean, she's amazing, so I'm okay with it.
Well, I've still only heard two songs.
Yeah, they're probably great.
I can't remember what they are, but they weren't awful, and I remember that much.
Yeah, exactly.
But that does take us nicely onto, you now get to choose one song, which is not to be on any of the albums.
The Kiss from The Last of the Mohicans soundtrack by, I think it's Trevor Jones composed it. It's a, you know, modern classical movie. I find it beautiful. I listen to it a lot in my head, and I have ever since I saw the movie decades and decades ago. So, like, I mean, the album is good. The whole album is good. There's like three particular songs that are just masterful arrangements. But if I had to pick one that would be on repeat, I would say The Kiss from The Last of the Mohicans soundtrack. I enjoy classical music. I'm by no means an aficionado or an expert or you know, but I think it's part of who I am in so many parts of my life. It's part of my soundtrack, I guess, you know, whether it's that time I sat at a ballet or I was at an opera or I built an event that had a string section behind or, you know, what I wanted life to be or just driving down the road. And those moments where you have to be inspired or take stock or find comfort or anything and above, I turn a lot to classical music in a strange way.
No, I fully agree. I listen to loads of classical.
And for some reason, that arrangement, I just find it in, you know, the scene in the film, which is nothing like the book, the scene in the film is a time of rest in chaos and just all this chaos and hope and inspiration. And when you find hope in chaos, in a moment of rest in that scenario, it's such a powerful scene.
I have a playlist that I've put together on Spotify, which is just instrumental stuff, but it's all sorts of instrumental stuff. So there's like some post rock, there's classical, there's some odd bits of funk. As it turns out, yes, she did a couple of instrumentals. And all sorts of odd shit, but there's a surprising amount of little snippets of movies in there, because so often they are encapsulating a journey really beautifully. I totally get where you're coming from. In fact, if I were doing this show, like one of my three albums would definitely be classical.
Okay. Yeah, but I don't.
It could be seen as a cheat because it's 8.5 hours long.
Requiem.
No, I tell you, if you haven't heard it, it's this dude called Max Richter.
Okay.
And he put an album together which is based on the different frequencies of the human brain during an 8-hour sleep.
Oh, I'd love to sleep for 8 hours.
It's fucking amazing. But they perform it live overnight.
Hmm.
In an auditorium with cots for the audience.
Okay.
I can buy two of my favorite things.
I get to sleep, I get to be social, and I have classical music.
But if I go with the right person, possibly three of my favorite things. But it's an unbelievably beautiful album. There's a melancholy to it, but I do like
that's what I find in a cello. When I hear a cello, I don't know why, but I think of like whale song. And it just, I just think there's this mournful, beautiful, soulful thing in a cello.
Don't. So I remember, once upon a time, I went to HMV in Oxford Street, right? Which is a fucking massive record shop. And I was with my friend Mara, right? And Mara had just released her first album, right? Lady called Mara Carlisle. She does the music that we use on the Gambling Files podcast. She's a fucking genius, in my opinion. And so we go in there, right? We go and check out her album on the shelves because it is beautiful. But also, I was in there to get a copy of Hot Buttered Soul by Isaac Hayes. Right. So I'm looking. They haven't got Hot Buttered Soul. I mean, you call yourself a record shop? And somehow I managed to walk out with the EMI Masters recording of Pablo Casals doing Bach's Suites for Cello and Violoncello.
It was a serendipitous trade.
God, what an album that is. And what I love is I got the CD And they, Casals did his recording in like the 1930s or whatever.
Mm.
And it's definitive. Mm. And so when they did the CD, they just recorded the album. They just recorded it off the vinyl. And so the CD starts with the crackle and hiss.
With the crackling instead of being remastered.
It's beautiful. Do it's just the warmest sound.
We have a phonograph in our house.
Oh,
and nice. I love it when we play. It's so loud. But and we have,
is it like a proper, like with the trumpet on it?
It's a box one where the bass is the speaker.
Okay, yeah.
So the turntable is at the top, and then the you open up the door and
yeah, anyway. And you can't turn it up too loud because the record will skip.
Right, there's no volume.
Well, that's something.
Yeah, the crackle. Anyway.
But I'm with you on the cello thing.
To a tropical island, by the way. I would not ruin it.
I actually filled out a dating app thing, and I put on it, cello playing weightlifters to the front of the queue, please. And weirdly, there weren't any.
It's a very specific niche market you were looking for.
Yeah, but you got to aim high. And I did end up going out with a cello player for like 8 months.
Hmm.
She never played it for me though, so she's out of here.
That was
she's not coming on my tropical island. Take your cello and stick it.
No cellos for you.
No. Now you get to choose one pet.
Choose which one?
Pet. Now, as somebody with three dogs, this might be difficult. Plus, you've got presumably childhood pets. You can't choose your bike, though.
So is it like a pet that I've had, or is it like...
It could be a pet somebody else has had that you just really liked.
Can it just be like any pet? Like if I could have the perfect pet?
You're not choosing some fantasy animal. This has to be a pet that's been in your life. You don't have to choose a pet. We can skip this.
I would never show favoritism.
I say that to my kids, and then I turn to the youngest, and I give them a wink, and I go,
"Yeah, you got it right. You gotta love them in different ways." Okay, emotional. Okay, so the thing that's been with me my whole life, almost, is a plush toy stuffed basset hound dog, and it goes by Ralph, and he has been with me for 46 years. And I'd have to take Ralph because I'm going nowhere without Ralph.
Just take a little step to my right. This is this is Spike. He's been with me for probably 46 years.
Right. There's just like mine's a meter long. And he's quite delicate. He now sits overlooking my bed instead of on my bed. But, you know, that show Repair Shop, like I would love for Ralph to go.
Don't, because if you look under here, you can see Spike's all split.
Yes.
And his zip's broken. And so my mum actually knitted this little protective sleeping bag for him.
My mum, before she passed, she started doing pet portraits for people. She's a painter. And I didn't have any pets. And so she did one of Ralph for me. And so I have a portrait of my stuffed dog, Ralph, on a bedroom wall, one of the bedrooms in the house.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's like Ralph's got to go. He's coming.
That is one. I love that. And I love that your mum did that. That is
that's
really special.
That just sums it all up right there.
That's up there with my mum knitting this.
Knitting a protective cover. I got the whole, I don't have a portrait of me. I don't have a portrait of anybody in my family, but I've got one of my stuffed dogs.
Thing is, he's got this little protective tabard, right? And you think she did this when I was really young. I think I was about 25 when she made this.
When I was at university, I was on a phone call and I accidentally like pulled one of Ralph's eyes out. Like you would have thought at like 19, 20 years old, I wouldn't have done this, but I carry around his eye in a very piece of china container thing because one day I'm going to put his eye back on. So he's like a one-eyed But
you just carry his eye around as a reminder. If he gets too cheeky, yes, I'll take the other one.
It's a lesson to not letting emotions overrule the conversation. Because it's like, oh my god, now look what you made me do to Ralph. Like, anyway.
Just be thankful you're not in the room. Just think what I would have done to you.
Oh, holy terrible. Crap.
But that your mum did a portrait of Ralph.
That was probably my favorite gift I've ever been given from my mum.
Like, that is, honestly, I think that is so special.
I'll have one commissioned for you.
I love it. I really is, because my kids, so like, this is going to sound fucking terrible, right? Well, it is. When I was a kid, my dad and my brother would play football and use my teddy bear as the ball.
Okay.
They would use Spike as the ball just to fucking make me cry. You know, it's not what you call a supportive environment to grow up in. And I think I've turned out okay, considering. But that means that whenever my kids are even arsy about each other's stuffed toys, I'm like, I just fucking jump on that. I'm like,
no. Yeah.
If it's important to him, then it's important.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think these things are...
It's critical.
Special. I think they're very, critical. Very special. My youngest, he's like, what is he, 7? And he's been obsessed with Pluto since he was crawling. And he's had this Pluto that I got him from Hong Kong Airport.
Okay.
Pluto's gone through multiple repairs because their mum has gotten puppies and stuff like that. And so he's had his tail chewed off. He's had a tail transplant from a different Pluto. He wouldn't accept a new Pluto, he would accept a tail transplant. And like, he still carries Pluto pretty much everywhere.
I love it. Like,
I'm not going to stop him doing that. It's important to him.
No, it's, I mean, these are my people.
I'm certainly not going to play fucking football with it.
No. Poor Ralph. He did go on walkabout once. It was my first trip to Europe. And I put him in the checked luggage because normally I would carry him on like my carry-on. Instead of like a carry-on, I bring Ralph. And this is, you know, 20 years ago. And before I had moved to Amsterdam the year before. So it must have been, oh yeah, it was exactly 20 years ago. And I go and I get to the office and these are people I didn't really know. And I was like, you don't understand, like my luggage. They're like, you can buy new clothes. I was like, no, Ralph is in there. So I was trying to explain this and they're all looking at me like, I am really off my rocker, you know? So Ralph arrives 3 or 4 days later in Amsterdam. I'm so overwhelmed with relief that I bring him to work the next day. And I was like, and somebody who we all know and love in the industry and is very well known and also super high intensity of a personality walks in and he's like, what the hell is this? I was like, this is Ralph. Like, and he was like, you literally had a stuffed dog in your bag and you brought this from America to go for a week. I was like, no, it goes everywhere with me. Like Ralph and I are a team. And so that was, and I was so proud. And then later on he came in and he wrapped him with like a nice scarf and he had a little toque on his head. He was given a little blanket for his journey. And so then everybody kind of rallied around this and it was brilliant. But that was Ralph's last road trip. And thank God, because I travel now like 1,000 times more than I did then. And I was always raised well-traveled, going between parents and things. But yeah, I would be devastated if something happened to Ralph.
Seriously, people are like, which child would you grab first in the event of a fire? And I'd be like, child?
Oh, no. The fire list, right? It's like passport, stack of cash, Ralph. Then my pets. I'm going to have 6 things.
Yeah, I might grab the cat.
I would definitely go pets.
That's an amazing choice for your pet. That's quality. But that does make this quite interesting. Now you can have one object.
Oh.
I think you should take the sunglasses. Portrait of Ralph.
Now I'm going to have to say sunglasses because like it's a tropical island.
Mm.
And so it's either going to have to be chapstick, but I know me, I wouldn't be able to ration it.
Oh, let's assume it's a limitless supply.
Okay.
Because I think chapstick would be mine as well.
Yeah, it's either going to be chapsticks or sunglasses. And I'm going to go with sunglasses because what if it's like a windy day? And there's like sand or you want to see. And what if you want to see if there's like help on the horizon? So you need like polarized glasses.
I wish that they would make a cherry chapstick that wasn't dark. Because I can't use a cherry one because people are like, you're wearing fucking lipstick. I'm like, no.
Yeah, it is. It does.
But smell my mouth. It's delicious.
Yeah, love chapstick.
But also, it gives me the opportunity to say things like, hang on a sec, I've got one on my desk here somewhere. There it is. I like to say, I like to rub some chapstick around my mouth.
Statements one would not say often.
Luckily, nobody's listening. Okay.
Chapstick's key to life.
Sorry?
So I'm just going to pretend that I can make my own chapstick out of the unlimited amount of food you gave me. There's like coconut oil there. There's going to be other things I can make chapstick out of. So.
Yeah, I think we can reasonably assume that your skin.
So I'm going to go, yeah, definitely sunglasses. What if you got a migraine and then you're stuck in the sun and you can't see?
Fuck.
What if you had a hangover?
Some people do overthink this.
Well, I mean, I like to be prepared. So I think it would ward off migraines. I could see into the sea. Like, what if there's a sandstorm? Or like, what if you just don't like?
Say sandstorm, but the beach is a relatively small part of this island. It's a tropical island.
There's going to be some sort of like between the water and land area.
Yeah, but it's not the bulk of this island.
If it's lava, it could be small pieces of lava that get in your eyeballs if the wind comes up. Yeah. That would be very painful. Yeah, definitely sunglasses.
I don't think it's a volcanic island, but I can see that I'm going to have to be much more specific.
You're going to have to be more specific.
I might even have to name the island.
I mean, if it's tropical, that's a lot. It could be a desert tropical island. It could be a jungle island. Like, all places that I would still want sunglasses on.
No, I think sunglasses are a very good shout because it's practical and luxurious.
Yeah, it would feel comforting, wouldn't it?
Because you could be like, okay, so, you know, I'm stuck on this island with fucking Pink's Greatest Hits, but I look good.
I look amazing. And people look 50% more attractive with sunglasses on.
Do they?
Well, I think they would. Like, think about it. On the days when you're like, oh, please don't take my picture. But if you have sunglasses on, you're like, yeah, take the picture.
I'm a bit weird about sunglasses. Really? I don't own any because I wear glasses, but I recognize people.
I got any on the table, but they're in the other room, so I can't help you.
I recognize people by their eyes.
Well, yeah, but you're alone on the tropical island.
Yeah, but I have this kind of antipathy towards.
Now, this way you could just be laying there reading your book, listening to Pink, and be like, but I look good.
I've walked past my own sister twice because she was wearing sunglasses. I didn't recognize her.
We should get you a better signal, like bats or something.
And she's really distinctive because she's only like 4'10".
There's a lot of vertically challenged people in my life.
You can call them dwarfy.
They're not even dwarfy. They're just like I'm 5'9". And so a lot of pictures with my friends, they look like they're photobombing me.
Or you're abducting them.
Yeah, that's the other option, which is not as flattering.
Well, my brother-in-law is like 6 foot, so I've always joked that if they hold hands in the street, it looks like she's being abducted.
Yeah. Height differentials.
But she's terrified of getting osteoporosis because she could potentially shrink and legally become a dwarf.
I don't think that would terrify me.
I think it would if you were 4'10".
My grandmothers were 4'10" and 4'11" or 4'11" and 5 foot. Anyway, come from a long line of
hearing. Being 5'9".
Yeah. My father is tall.
Even so.
Yeah. Yeah. I have my sister is short. My mother is short. Both of my grandparents and my great grandmother, all very short women.
Wow.
My sister insists that she's average, but to, you know, comparison.
How tall is your sister?
5'4"-ish.
That's fairly standard for a woman, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, she's not on my island. Put my sunglasses back on.
Okay, so we're coming to key choices now.
Okay.
One dessert.
A strawberry shortcake.
No with like hesitation. Really,
no. Well, I mean, if it's not an option, then I would say carrot cake, which is also amazing. But carrot cake can be so controversial. And I only like it when it's made with pineapple instead of raisins, because semi-rehydrated raisins are incredibly creepy. But, and then, you know, the other thing about carrot cake is it has to have perfect cream cheese, like icing.
Hold on. Are you saying that carrot cake has to be made with pineapple?
Yeah. Instead of raisins.
But even the raisins.
Part, I told you carrot cake is incredibly controversial, but strawberry shortcake always makes everybody happy. Including me.
Wow.
And you're not going to eat the whole cake for yourself. You have to like pretend you're going to have a guest on the tropical island or like save it for tomorrow. And strawberry shortcake could be breakfast or it could be dinner or lunch. Or it could just be cake. Mm. Carrot cake. Well, I mean, carrot cake too. But again, there's too many factors with carrot cake.
It's not a breakfast cake.
You have walnuts in there. Do you, you know, is it pineapple instead of raisins? Does it have real carrots? Oh,
walnut is.
Right. Like, and then, but the cream cheese frosting has to be the right level and has to be chilled. But moist and not dry. There's too much to control. And what if there's ants on this island? And then, you know, like carrot cake, you can't tell if there's an ant. Is that an ant, a weevil, or like a piece of the spice? But shortcake, you could tell.
You can tell if you're accidentally ingesting some additional protein.
I mean,
I think the insects on the island are averse to desserts. I think
I wouldn't be. If I was like a little bug, I would be straight up in that like chantilly cream.
Yeah, but
strawberry.
You know, it's actually quite a nice environment we're in, and we don't want to be messing with your choice of dessert. Strawberry shortcake. Wow.
I love strawberry cake. It's just happy. Like, I don't know anybody who eats strawberry shortcake, and it's like, oh, I'm still sad. No one.
No, I mean, how could you? It's like...
You could start a debate about shortcake versus sponge cake versus, you know, what's the actual cakey part. But
a friend of mine used to say this about the color orange. She used to wear a lot of bright orange stuff, and she's like, if you wear bright orange, you just can't be sad.
It's how I am about pink. I have a pink sofa.
Okay, good knowledge. Is it a very pink sofa?
It's pretty pink.
Is it that one in the background?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's quite a subtle pink. I thought you were like pink.
I got like hot pink shirt on.
Yes, you have.
Pink makes me happy.
Pink's a fine color.
And yellow. Yellow is also good.
Oh, yeah, but yellow on a tropical island, you're going to attract insects.
Well, so do I bring up like... the flies in Africa that are attracted to blue. Like, so I think I spend a lot of time thinking about insects that are attracted to different colors because I'm not like a natural, I want to be covered by insects so I can be up close and personal with them. So there's a particular kind of fly in Africa that when you're in safari, they tell you like avoid the color blue because they will be attracted to you. So you keep with like stone khaki, olive green, that kind of thing. Also, you shouldn't wear bright white because it's too contrasting. And then like it causes like visual disturbances and the animals that can see you won't want to come near you. So you have to think about color choices. And then if we're going to get in the sea, I'm terrified of fish because they are eaten by other bigger, scarier fish like sharks. And so like, you know, like they don't wear contrasting colors and don't wear yum, yum yellow and don't like neons and everything that you see in like swimsuits are all the reasons, like nothing with like a metal clasp. If I see a woman with jewelry get into the sea and we're snorkeling together, I'm like, you giant fishing lure need to move away. Like all, everything about your shiny sparkly self is just asking to be bait for something very big.
You so, in the seal fancy dress. Get away from me.
I just would prefer to not look like a seal or a sea lion or something shiny and shimmery like a fishing lure. And so like my favorite suit I ever had was like white with green palms. And like, I'm super pale and I just kind of looked like a weird floating colony of seaweed. And nobody wants to go and be like, let's go check out the seaweed today. Right. Yeah. And so yeah.
Apart from a basking shark, maybe.
I don't really know how we got on this topic, but I went straight into don't wear contrasting colors on this island. Because what if you have to go swimming?
It's become very technical.
Well, I was room for survival skills. You got to think about like worst case scenario and then build from there.
I can't help wondering what it is that attracts those flies to blue, though. There's got to be an evolutionary reason for it.
Yeah, I think it's something to do with water in like the desert areas. And it's something with like their eyesight and assuming that it's like a watering thing. So, it's like a testy fly or something, but it's anyway, something I do not want to have. And it's something that like bites you or something. And I just thought, okay, I don't need any of this. So I wore a lot of green. I don't even like green, but I love Africa.
Good knowledge. I'm going to go upstairs and burn half my wardrobe. Okay, we are with this. This is the denouement. This is the climax of the piece. This is the part where we unmask who the traitor is.
All right.
If this were a spy movie.
Okay.
By the way, speaking of spy things, have you seen Slow Horses on Apple Plus TV?
I started it, but it was a bit slow. I mean, I know it's on the tin, but... We watched season one. It took us a really long time to get through it.
This is where you guys, and there were no horses.
Also true. I'm so sorry. The dangers of working from home.
It's okay. I work from home too. And it's, always interesting.
Entertaining. So the big reveal moment. Who's the traitor?
Well, this is the bit where you get to give your younger self one piece of advice. But you get to choose when you give it to yourself.
So, like, am I forever on this tropical island, or is it that this is where I'm at, and at some point I know I'm not going to be on a tropical island? These are very different kinds of advice.
Yeah, but to put this into some kind of context, time travel hasn't actually been invented. This is just made up.
All right.
It's like, if you can travel through time, why are you on a fucking tropical island? What's going on here? It's like you want to be there.
So assuming that this tropical island is a respite from like reality that I might have to deal with, or another parallel universe in time travel that I'm jumping between space time continuums here, I wish I would have been explained compound interest when I was younger. I spend an extraordinary amount of time in my 40s thinking about compound interest, and not necessarily that it changes my behavior to good, not evil, but like, when I was too young, I, you're just trying to have enough money to make a sandwich. But like, I would say maybe around like 31, 32, I would give myself a nice long chat about the power of compound interest. And perhaps that would have changed some of my fiscal decisions or lack thereof. And not to become, you know, we're wealthy or anything like that, but to have less worry about strife or financial difficulty in a time when you're supposed to be really just enjoying later years. And so, otherwise known as this myth called retirement. And so I just think, you know, if I'm not stuck on the island, but if I am stuck on the island, I guess the best advice that I would give myself, and I would give it to myself like every day, is your imagination can take you anywhere you want it to be. And it's limitless. And to not allow your circumstances to drive your behavior that day. So, but to be fair, I'd probably give myself that advice anyway.
But it's very good advice. And it's actually, I have told my daughter that many times, slightly differently, because she's profoundly disabled. And so, you know, she can't go running around and stuff. She can't walk. But I've always said to her, look, there is nothing restraining your brain from doing whatever it wants.
You can be and experience, and you can time travel. You can be in the, you know, my favorite place on this entire planet is Antarctica. I loved my time in Antarctica. And I take myself there in my imagination often, right? And so I think it's just that reminder that imagination is boundless and available at all times.
It's a good shout. But so is the compound interest one, and I can totally relate to that. Totally relate to that.
Way too much time spending thinking about compound interest rates.
Maybe if it was me, I'd go back to my sort of, I don't know, 18, 17-year-old self and say, you don't have to drink everything you earn. It's not a challenge.
Yeah. I remember at one point I was just so not excited, but I felt liberated in a way when I had enough spending power to not care about the price of things. And that was kind of in those first earning years where, I mean, I wasn't buying a Ferrari, you know, but small little things. If I walked into a jewelry shop and I was like, oh, I do really like this, I'll take that. Right. And things in just daily transactional life, where, you know, if you add up all those little things and, you know, what does that look like in different ways? But I also am very experience driven. You know, I would never exchange any of the money that I've invested on travel and learning new cultures or seeing new places or reaching some place that I'd only ever dreamed of or read about or seen in photographs. And so like I never think about those types of things, but I do think a little bit about like, what happened to the money? Like, what did I spend it on? Because it certainly isn't, I value art. I value jewelry. I keep those things. So that's what I buy when I travel to said places. I value experiences, but like, do I value that I had that one particular item from that one shop that, you know, or did I need all those things? No. So I wish I would have known like how a tiny little bit of savings actually changes your life at 70 years old for a tiny little thing that happened when you were 30.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. I mean, I'm a little older than you, But I am also having those thoughts and thinking, well, fuck, retirement is not happening for me.
Right. Yeah. It's just, and if it is, then what does that look like? What, you know, how do you keep yourself from going insane? How do you keep yourself from being utterly and totally disconnected from society?
Well, I'm stockpiling books now because I know that
it'd be free.
I know that when I retire, I'm not going to be able to.
You're going to be sitting there reading Laura Ingalls Wilder. You're going to be like, this is a good book. Jem Bowman was right.
Who knew Anne of Green Gables would speak to me so succinctly?
Yeah, I think as soon as you heard about the, you know, the Avenue or the White Way of Delight, you'd be fine. Lake of Shining Waters.
I might go and find it on my Kindle.
It's excellent.
I've got this like stockpile of stuff on my Kindle, so it's like if I have to go somewhere at short notice, stick the Kindle in the work backpack and the laptop and the passport, and there we go. But luckily, I don't have to travel anywhere anymore. So,
anyway. All good things.
Yeah. Anyway, Jennifer Bowman.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much for entering so fully into the spirit of this podcast. It's been enlightening. and what I'm leaving this conversation with is I really want to see the portrait.
I will just email you a copy.
Can I use the picture to publicize this on 100%. Social media?
100%. Ralph is well known in my community.
I've got to see it. I've got to see it. I love so much that your mum did that for you. I think that's so special.
She's amazing.
It is. It's up there with Spike's protective tabard.
Like, we all have those moments where we're like, that is love. Thank you so much for having me on. I've had such a good time.
Thank you very much.